Chapter 19. It all fit in two boxes. Then, July.
Figure skates, Dan said that Thursday night. Keep or toss?
Keep. He poked his head out of one of the hall closets that we used for storage.
You haven't skated since I met you.
Yeah, but I might.
I thought the idea was to reduce the amount of stuff we have.
Useless stuff. I took the skates from him and put them on my keep pile. I was never a good skater, but that didn't mean I didn't still harbor dreams of taking lessons one day and learning how to do a double axel. I'd need my skates for that. Like the rollerblades. Those we can toss.
I think they're coming back.
Don't care. Remember what happened the last time we went rollerblading? Dan looked sheepish. He'd had a bad fall and he'd ended up in the emergency room with nothing broken but a body full of bruises and a mild concussion.
Okay, you have a point.
I put our rollerblades and related equipment into the toss pile, which was not as large as it should have been. Good thing the new place has lots of room.
Yeah.
Dan.
What?
He gave me a look that I understood. He was wearing an old band t-shirt from his college days, and it was a bit tight against his belly. Too many takeout meals for both of us over the last 10 years had crept up on him, too, despite his Sunday runs. He wasn't happy about the new apartment. He hadn't said no, but his yes felt like a concession and not an agreement. It's going to be a good thing.
So you keep saying.
Why don't you think it is?
You don't think it's weird that we're getting it so cheap?
It's what the group's about, I told you.
Making bad real estate deals?
Ha ha. I put down the winter coat I'd bought him on a whim a few years before and that he'd never worn, and walked to where Dan stood, at the threshold of the closet. What's really going on? His eyes were on his shoes, an old pair of Stan Smith's that I thought he'd thrown out long ago.
Hudson Yards doesn't seem like a great place to raise kids to me.
And there it was. Dan's casual request that I think about having kids had cemented into something he thought we were doing, despite our agreement to park it. We said we'd talk about that, not that it was happening.
Seems like you decided we aren't going to.
I put my hands on my hips. I felt sweaty and dusty from the packing. I'd spent 10 hours at the office that day, billing every second I could, and it was now past 8. I was too tired to fight. Hey, that's not fair. We did decide. Remember? Together? He raised his head.
I'm allowed to change my mind, aren't I?
I knew he wanted me to say yes to this, but it didn't feel like a decision where you could change your mind. Not practically. I don't know, Dan. This is a big thing, and my career is on a precipice right now.
You could step back from it.
What?
Forget it.
No, tell me. What did you mean? He sighed.
I know you'd rather be caught dead than working where I do, okay? And don't say you don't feel that way, because you do. You look down on in-house jobs. But you know what? It's not that bad. It's less money, but also fewer hours. And it's not like you're saving the world doing civil litigation. Why are you killing yourself for those assholes?
Wow.
What?
How long have you felt this way?
Forever.
You've never said anything. He shoved his hands into his pockets.
How could I? You were so into it. You are still.
I'm sorry.
Why are you apologizing? It's what it is. But it doesn't have to be, is all I'm saying. When's the last time you were happy? Like, truly happy. Not glad you won a case or high on a good distribution. But content.
Is anybody happy? I said lightly.
Yeah, Nick. I think a lot of people are.
My smile dropped. You think a baby will change things?
It will.
It will change our lives, but you think it's going to, what, make me care less about my career? And who's going to be taking care of this baby?
You're having a baby, Louise said from behind me.
I closed my eyes and turned away from Dan, my pulse thrumming. Louise walked through our front door with a set of keys in her hand. Dan plastered on a smile and held his arms out to her for a cheek kiss.
No, Mother, you misunderstood.
You don't knock, I said, then shot Dan a dirty look. Sometimes I envied people who were friendly with their in-laws. Especially since my own parents were dead, it would have been nice to have a replacement family to step into. But Penny was right. Dan was the best of the lot by a country mile. Only now, he wanted things I didn't. I felt lost in our hallway, surrounded by the things we were tossing from our life together. Was one of us supposed to be on one of the piles?
We told Dan we were coming, Catherine said, stepping out from behind Louise. They were both dressed in impeccable summer outfits, loose satin skirts with halter tops that skimmed their thin frames. They were fresh from the salon with flawless makeup. I felt even grungier than I had earlier.
I'm sure he mentioned it then.
He hadn't, but we had to be on the same team where they were concerned.
What can we do for you at 8:30 at night?
We're here to measure, Louise said, taking an actual tape measure out of her purse.
I assumed Louise was joking.
For drapes?
Drapes, furniture, the works. Our flight leaves tomorrow morning. We wanted to get it done before we go so Catherine can order what she needs.
This place will be much lighter without all of these old things in it, Catherine said, running her finger along Penny's entrance table as if she was inspecting for dust. Don't you agree?
Obviously not, Catherine, Dan said,
more aggressively than I'd ever heard him talk to his sister.
And you said you were coming at 6.
Catherine shrugged. We got held up at the designers. I felt a burning rage in my stomach, and I slunk away from the conversation. I went into the living room and decided to tackle packing up my books. There was a full shelf of titles I'd always meant to read but hadn't gotten around to. Was Dan right? Was I wasting my life? What was I supposed to do instead? Read all day and shop like his mother? No, he didn't want that. I knew he didn't. We'd work through this like we'd worked through everything. We'd be okay. We just had to pack our things and move to our new place and stop seeing his family on a semi-regular basis. But then I heard the whispered word, baby, float toward me from the hallway, and I couldn't tell whether Dan was telling them to drop it or to hope. I didn't have the courage to ask. On my way to work on Friday, I got a text from Karma asking for a status update on the hiring of one Julia Sanders, the Harvard grad I was supposed to hook up with a job at my firm. I was standing on the subway platform, sweating in the heat, wishing I'd followed through on my plan to leave more clothes at the office so I could arrive in shorts and change there. I made this plan every year, and I never did it. Julia had reached out to me a few days before and sent me her resume and transcript. She was in the top third of her class and had all the usual accomplishments you might expect of a Harvard Law graduate, except that she didn't have a job. She'd interned at Good Karma when she was in college, which might have been how Karma knew her, though I doubt she had time for interns. She looked presentable, seemed to have friends, and didn't post anything inappropriate online. Why did she need a leg into the firm? Using one didn't help your career, I'd found. Watching the trail of sons and daughters of who'd summered at the office or spent a few years there before they realized they were never getting anywhere and left. I texted the group. Are we supposed to do favors for each other even when the favor isn't a good idea?
Like what?
Athena answered. I hesitated. I didn't know the protocol about requests, but I had an instinct Karma wouldn't approve of me broadcasting it. I switched to a private message with Athena. Karma wants me to get a job for someone at my firm.
What's the problem?
Well, assuming I can even get it done, which is a big if, it won't be good for this girl. Everyone will know she pulled strings to get in, and that's frowned on. Besides, she doesn't even need it. She'd get hired on her own.
Karma asked you, though.
Yeah.
I'd do it, personally.
Okay, thanks.
The subway car pulled up, blowing its usual hot breeze across my face. It smelled fetid, but walking to work in this heat was a no-go. I put my phone away and got on, hoping that a minimal number of bodies would be pressing against me. Every day seemed to bring a new stress. The fight with Dan after his mother and sister had finally left the night before, in which I made it clear that they weren't going to be invited to our new place. The thick solvent file that weighed down the bag slung across my shoulder, which I wanted badly but was anxiety-producing nonetheless. The need to try to find a moving truck for all our things and the endless exhaustion of packing. And now I had to convince Thomas to give Julia a chance at an open associate position when there were no such positions available. The subway jolted away from the stop as my phone received a new message from Athena. "Ask for what you need, and you'll make it happen," she'd written. The same advice I'd gotten from Michelle. I'd asked Connie for a file, and now I was about to meet with the biggest client of my career. If I landed it, a lot of things could change for me. So maybe that was the answer. I was stuck where I was because I didn't ask for the help I needed to get out. Could it be that easy? It was time to find out. Chapter 20. New Beginnings. Then, July. My meeting with Sullivan wasn't until the afternoon, so I decided to tackle the Julia problem first. Thomas, the jack-of-all-trades of our firm, was in charge of recruiting. I figured I could butter him up by telling him about the meeting and then ask for the job interview. The file Connie had sent me was a doozy. Sullivan had fired their founder, majority shareholder, and CEO, Vic Sullivan, after some vaguer-than-usual allegations of sexual impropriety by a woman named Jennifer Naughton. He'd sued them for millions for wrongful termination and damage to his reputation. Until his ouster, Sullivan had been a Wall Street wunderkind, starting 3 successful companies in different industries. Sullivan was fine without Sullivan, but he cared about his reputation, and based on the evidence, he had good reason to fight. Naughton had come forward with accusations of inappropriate language in a few meetings and the feeling that she had to sleep with him to advance in the company, but no one else had backed up her allegations. She'd even gotten a promotion before she made the complaint. I could see why the company wanted new lawyers. Their existing counsel had written a cover-your-ass memo setting out his recommendation to settle, but the company had refused to do so. I was probably going to lose, and I was curious about why Sullivan wouldn't settle, but the file could easily represent a million in billables.
"Well, that's good news," Thomas said after I filled him in. "Your meeting today?"
"Yes, at 2. He smiled.
"I notice you've logged more time this week."
"I've been doing what I can."
"Excellent."
He folded his hands on his desk.
"I'm so glad you took my pep talk to heart."
I gritted my teeth. "Thanks for the mentoring."
"Always happy to help."
I did have something to ask. Thomas picked a piece of lint off his suit jacket.
"Oh?
Is that wise?" his tone said, but I plowed ahead anyway. "I've received a recommendation for a highly impressive young woman from Harvard who's looking to work at our firm."
"It's not hiring season."
"I know that. However, you've always said it was important not to miss opportunities when they came along, and with this new file, it would be good to have a new associate without anything on her plate to devote herself to it. The trial's only a few months away, and I'm going to need someone helping me full-time."
"Why doesn't she have a position already?"
"Sounds like an excellent question for you to ask her in her interview."
"We'll see."
"I'll schedule something with your assistant." I turned and left without waiting for his answer, so he didn't have a chance to say no. It's what a man would do. That afternoon, my assistant let me know that the clients had arrived, and I went to the boardroom on the 40th floor. It was our showstopper conference room with mesmerizing panoramic views of Manhattan. I wore my best suit and had taken extra care with my appearance, going for a blowout over my lunch hour. This was as good as it was going to get for me. I was never going to look like Louise or Catherine, but I could do things they couldn't do. "Good afternoon, gentlemen," I said, reaching out my hand to the nearest suit sitting at the long oak table.
"Ah, Nicole, excellent. So glad you could make it," Thomas said.
I stuttered to a stop, my heart sinking. Thomas was perched at the other end, a notepad in front of him as well as a half-empty cup of coffee. He was settled in and comfortable, and I could almost smell the testosterone in the air. Oh no, I'd misunderstood. They didn't want me, they wanted Thomas. Would I even get the credit for bringing in the file? But I'd been here before. I knew what to do. I smiled and introduced myself to the men, their new CEO, and then the chairman, Guy Mason, who'd overseen the firing. But where was Connie? I checked my phone quickly. There wasn't any message from her saying she'd be late. Damn it. I took a seat to the left of Thomas and tried to take control. "First off, I wanted to thank you for trusting me, us, with the file. I understand that it's late in the game to change counsel, but rest assured, we will be prepared to proceed to trial as scheduled if that is what you want to do."
"Nicole is the brains of the operation," Thomas said, giving me a paternal smile that made my stomach churn.
Men were always saying that like it was a compliment, like we should be grateful that they identified that we were indispensable to their success.
"Which is why she'll be heading this file," Connie said, coming into the room with an air of authority.
"Pardon me,"
Thomas said, swiveling around in his chair. Connie smiled like a cat with a bowl of warm milk. Her hair was perfect, and her bright red lipstick was intimidating.
"We wouldn't want anybody but the brains of the operation handling this file, would we, gentlemen?"
Guy Mason nodded his head.
"Stands to reason."
"Thanks for the warm welcome," Connie said, reaching out her hand to Thomas. "We won't be needing you in the rest of the meeting."
"I'm the senior partner on the file."
"We hired Nicole."
Thomas stood, flustered. I don't think he'd been dismissed from a meeting in his entire career. It made me want to laugh, but I did my best to keep my features tight. This probably wasn't the way back into Thomas's good graces, but for the moment, I didn't care.
"I'm sure you want to keep your budgets under control," Thomas said, moving toward the door. "Nicole is perfectly competent to handle this file."
"More than, I'm sure."
"As you say."
Connie stared at him, waiting for him to leave. After a moment of indecision, where he couldn't quite believe he was going to have to do it and was clearly waiting for someone to call him back, he left. Connie turned away from the door as it swung shut on Thomas.
"Sorry about that, gentlemen."
"Perfectly all right," Guy Mason said.
He was in his late 60s and had a large paunch that stood out from his body almost vertically.
"I almost felt sorry for the poor guy," Mark Fiore said. "He obviously doesn't remember me, but I trained under him, and I have to say, Connie, that was a pleasure to watch."
"Oh," I said, "you're an alum? I didn't see that on your bio."
Mark's mouth twisted into a smile. He was about 45 and fit, with laugh lines around his eyes and an air of authority that came from being the man in charge early in life.
"I don't advertise it. I like to lie in wait for the lawyers and then pounce on them with my knowledge."
"Ha, love it."
"You've been working with Thomas for a long time?"
"Since I was a summer student."
"My condolences."
I kept my features smooth. This was a dangerous conversation. He might be against Thomas, or he might be testing my loyalty.
"He's been a big champion for me and the firm."
Mark nodded knowingly. I'm sure he has.
Connie sat in the chair that had been vacated by Thomas. Nicole, I'd like your honest assessment of the case. No holds barred, we can take it.
You should settle.
Sullivan doesn't want to, Mark said.
As it stands right now, we're going to lose. Jennifer Naughton was contradicted on some significant details in her timeline. There are no witnesses to the harassment. She got promoted even though she didn't sleep with him. Her allegations are not supported by anyone else.
What happened to believe all women? Guy asked.
That's a slogan for rallies and Twitter. It's not how courtrooms work. The benefit of the doubt legally goes to the party that's been accused of wrongdoing. People are assumed to be in good faith. The balance tips toward dismissal, not liability.
So what are our options? Mark asked.
Did you investigate to see if there were other women he'd harassed?
We did.
That's not in the court file.
Connie cleared her throat.
Our previous attorney thought it was better to bury that section of the internal report rather than admit that we found nothing.
Oh, you think that was bad advice? Mark asked.
I wasn't going to get any points for disparaging their former lawyer, but it was terrible advice. I'm a fan of being 100% honest with the court. In my view, bad facts always come out. I'd rather control the manner in which they do.
But if we bring it forward now, we'd lose credibility, right?
It's definitely a problem, and a bigger one now that I know about it. I can't lie to the court. But there might be a way to spin it. Since I'm new in the file, I could play the "this has just come to my attention" card and let it be understood that you didn't know about the decision to bury it. It's definitely best to bring it out before trial. It could also be a door to opening settlement negotiations again.
You can't settle with someone who doesn't want to.
I agree, but everyone will settle. In my experience, it's only a matter of the price.
Guy tapped the table with his fingers.
He's a billionaire. He doesn't care about the money.
Mark leaned forward.
The board has been clear that they don't want to give a dime to Sullivan, so settlement seems unlikely unless he walks away.
Well, he cares about his reputation, and other things might come out during the trial that he doesn't want people to know.
Any idea of what?
I've done some research, and he's had a lot of departures over the years at Nexia.
His nanotech company?
Mark said.
That's right. I bet there's something there.
But it wasn't at Sullivan. Would that even be relevant in the trial?
A pattern is a pattern, and ultimately a jury has to want to find for someone. If we can show that he's generally distasteful, it can help us, either to negotiate or win.
I think I can help you with that, Connie said. And bravo, Nicole.
What did I do?
You anticipated me. There is, in fact, a woman who's come forward from Nexia.
Connie picked up her phone and sent a text. I brought her with me today.
She turned her chair toward the conference room door. There was a knock, and then the door opened slowly.
I'd done an okay job, I thought, at keeping my feelings to myself earlier. But it was harder this time.
Because the woman coming into the boardroom was someone I knew. Samantha.
Chapter 21. What did I miss? Then, July.
That was a good meeting,
Mark said more than 2 hours later when we'd been over the file in detail and had put together a game plan. Samantha was standing at the window looking at the view. It was quite a story she'd had to tell. She'd been hired by Sullivan early on to be the face of Nexia's advertising campaign, an acting job of sorts that had come with good pay, time for auditions, and then a terrible price.
Agreed, I said as we stood to go. We should have a drink. Swap Thomas stories.
Sure. I checked his left hand as subtly as I could. He was wearing a wedding band, and so was I.
How about next Thursday?
He asked. Let me check my schedule. I'm looking forward to working with you.
Mark put his hand on my shoulder and gave it a light squeeze before leaving with Guy. I waited till the door shut behind them before speaking.
What the hell is going on?
I tried to control the anger in my voice, but I didn't quite make it.
Connie looked up from her phone.
What's the issue?
You know what the issue is, Connie. You ambushed me.
I brought you a great case that you desperately need.
I clamped my jaw shut. So I'm supposed to ignore the coincidence that you sit on the board of a company that has a legal case where Samantha is an important witness?
That's how we met, Samantha said, turning around. Her face was blank, though it had been constricted in pain earlier as she went through the details of what had happened to her.
Connie's been counseling me for months, trying to get me to come forward. That's why I was invited to join PL.
Some of my anger seeped out.
Oh.
Connie cocked her head to the side.
You thought what?
That I'd ask Samantha to make up a story to win a case?
That was what I'd been thinking, a massive accusation to make.
I don't like coincidences.
Connie put her phone into her sleek black purse. I'm the head of the litigation committee, and I've been searching for other victims ever since this happened to Naughton because I knew there had to be others. Sullivan is a sleaze. I found Samantha, and she eventually agreed to talk to me. I was impressed with her courage and how she'd turned what happened to her into a passion for helping other women escape abusive relationships. We're always searching for new members for PL, so I suggested to Karma and Michelle that she be invited to join us.
But not Naughton? She's not in Panthera?
No. It's terrible what happened to her, but she's a lower-level employee, not PL caliber.
What about me? How did I get invited?
Connie's eyes met Samantha's briefly.
That wasn't my call.
Whose was it?
You'd have to ask Karma or Michelle.
She paused, and her expression made it clear that I should leave it alone.
I guess it doesn't matter.
Why so many questions today, Nicole? Is there something you need to say?
I tried to determine if Samantha had any of the same concerns that I did. Her face was wan and her shoulders were slumped. She wanted the meeting to be over, but her expression didn't register the concern I was feeling.
No, we just weren't given many instructions on how Panthera works, that's all.
It's not complicated. We help one another when we need to. But you don't have to take the help. The apartment, the case, those are your choices. You can say no.
I felt like a chastened child.
Okay.
I'm sure there are plenty of other lawyers who'd be more than happy to take on this case.
I kicked myself. This is why I wasn't where I was supposed to be in my career. Because I looked a gift horse in the mouth and saw an enemy.
No, thank you. I want the case.
And the apartment?
And that too. Thank you.
Connie's features softened.
I understand that you felt left out of the process, and that's my fault. I should have told you that Samantha was a witness when I sent you the file, but until she showed up today, I wasn't entirely sure that she would.
I was hesitating, Samantha said. Sullivan is very connected in the entertainment industry.
How?
He funds productions. He doesn't have a traditional production company, but a lot of films have private backers, money men who expect a return on their investment and who aren't going to hire a difficult woman.
Why come forward, then?
Samantha's hands fluttered at her sides.
Because, fuck it. Fuck them. He shouldn't get away with this. I read the proceedings, her deposition. Jennifer Naughton just wanted to do her job. She wanted to make a living, and instead she had to deal with that asshole and his innuendos and everyone in the office thinking that she'd done something wrong when all she did was say no.
That's a good speech, Connie said.
It's the truth.
I believe you, I said.
Thank you, Samantha said. Do you think it's going to make a difference?
It will help.
Now it's a pattern. although we'll have to get permission from the judge to introduce the prior bad act evidence. The case had been assigned to Judge Karen Osterlink, a newer appointment I didn't know well, but who'd let in this type of evidence in at least one other case. There had been 3 victims there, though. Connie, I assume Samantha was the only other person you could find? Connie and Samantha shared another glance. I felt left out, and I didn't like it. Why? Connie asked. Because the more the better if we're going to get the judge to accept it. Don't 2 people create a pattern? Maybe yes, maybe no. The case law isn't black or white on this issue, and the judge will have a lot of discretion. There might be 1 other victim, but I don't think she'd be willing to testify. Can you tell me who it is? No, but it would be explosive. I gritted my teeth. I was used to clients withholding information no matter how often I told them to tell me everything, but it was always frustrating. Can you work on her? For the first time that day, Connie looked unsure. I've been trying, but it's delicate. The more I know, the more I can help you. I understand. I would tell you if I could. I wanted to push further, but I suspected the truth would come out eventually. It usually did. All right, let me know if you make any headway. Samantha, I'm going to need an affidavit from you, which I'll prepare based on my notes from today. I'll send you a draft to review, and then we'll see what the judge has to say. I walked to her and put my hand on her arm. Thank you for your courage. Samantha met me with tired eyes. Just win, okay? I'll do what I can. They left, and I returned to my office and got to work, still unsettled by the connections and Connie's duplicity. Her explanation for them made sense, but something was still bothering me. I thought back, trying to see if this new information changed anything that had happened at the ranch. Nothing came to mind, but I felt as if there was something that was lingering just out of view. I tried to puzzle it out, then let it go. Solutions presented themselves, I found, when I gave my brain enough time to process. So instead, I worked on Samantha's affidavit. And then, as I packed up my things to go home, it hit me. The first time I'd heard anyone mention Sullivan outside of the news was in Colorado. Something Heather had told me that first day in the gym. That Michelle and Karma had ramped up their efforts with Panthera because of Sullivan's failed attempt to take over Good Karma. And now members of Panthera might take down Sullivan. Karma, as they say, was a bitch. A week of long hours and packing swept by until it was Thursday, the night I'd agreed to a drink with Mark Fiore. It was a hot, muggy day, and a break from my files and the black mood at home was appealing. I called Dan to let him know where I was going and with whom. That was the deal we'd made after everything that happened between us 5 years ago. No lying, no hiding, full disclosure. Dan was stuck late at work, too, but I could tell he was uncomfortable with me going for a drink with another man. What are the chances, I said to him in the Uber on the way to the wine bar, that he's going to hit on me given the nature of the case I'm representing his company in?
Don't be so sure. Guys are always looking for an opportunity to score.
Including you? I teased.
Course not.
You checked with the movers?
They'll be here bright and early Saturday.
I won't be late. We hung up and the Uber pulled up to my destination. The wine bar Mark had picked was a dark, sexy place with a long bar along the right-hand side and mahogany booths with soft red leather seats that were meant for 2 people. Soft jazz was playing, and the price per glass was what I used to spend on food for a week when I was in law school.
Thanks for meeting me, Mark said, standing as I approached his table.
He didn't have his phone out, something I appreciated and admired. I couldn't think of the last time I'd waited for someone without taking my phone out and doom-scrolling.
When I got close enough, he put his hand on the small of my back and kissed me briefly on the cheek before I had a chance to get my hand out. His cologne was unfamiliar but appealing.
I know it's an unusual request.
Is it?
Can't be too careful these days, he said as I sat down.
He'd taken off his tie and his 5 o'clock shadow had come in. He was an attractive, confident man.
And that's good, don't get me wrong. The things we've all seen.
He rolled his eyes.
I'm sure you have many stories.
Everyone has stories.
That's sad.
It is. I picked up the wine menu. What do you recommend?
If you like Montepulciano, they have one that's delicious, and the charcuterie plate is great.
That's a red wine? He chuckled.
You're joking, I assume.
It sounds good. We put our menus down and he called over a server and got the ordering out of the way. Our drinks came quickly, followed by the charcuterie plate moments later. Did this bar not want people to linger?
Good?
Mark asked as I took a sip. Delicious. I eyed the charcuterie plate. I didn't want to eat sloppily in front of a client, so I went for a piece of cheese that was already cut.
Wow, this is really good too.
Yeah, I love this place. I come here a lot since the separation. I felt a sliver of unease. How long have you been separated?
Couple of months.
He played with his wedding band.
Can't quite bring myself to take this off yet. That would make it permanent.
You don't want that?
Ending things wasn't my choice.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. What about you? Happily married?
I took a large sip of my wine, thinking of the word that hung in the air every time Dan and I spoke now. Baby, baby, baby. Dan is great, I said, because he was. Whatever happened between us, that never changed.
What does he do?
He's also a lawyer, in-house at a bank.
He gets sick of Thomas?
Oh, huh, no. He was at Ogilvy's. We never worked together.
Smart. You?
He raised his eyebrows.
I was not that smart.
Ah.
Yes, well, when we get through this case, I'm going to need you to negotiate a large severance package for her. She's the head of finance.
Got it. Should be doable.
What did you say during our meeting? Anything's doable if you're willing to spend enough money.
I smiled.
I did say that. Amanda can be very stubborn.
I leaned back in the booth with a second piece of cheese. The wine made me feel warm on the inside and more relaxed than I had in a while. Tell me about Sullivan. You worked with him?
Mark's face clouded over. I did.
And what's he like? What do I need to know about him?
He likes to think he's the smartest person in the room.
Don't we all? Mark smiled.
Sure, right. But the thing is, he is. He'll see anything coming a mile away. He has this ability to laser focus. Have you read the depositions?
Not yet.
I'll save you the trouble. We got nothing.
I held my wine glass in my hands. It was almost empty, and I would have loved to have another. But I told Dan I'd be home early, and I could already feel my defenses weakening. Mark was charming and smart. He spoke with a directness I liked. What was I thinking? Not clearly, obviously. There probably never was any point in cross-examining Sullivan at trial anyway.
Cases are not made through cross-examination, Mark said.
If you need to cross-examine your opponent successfully to win, you should settle, I complete.
Oh, Thomas. He never...
I shuddered.
What?
No, never. He wasn't like that with me. Mark finished his glass of wine and signaled to the waitress to bring another. He nodded toward me to ask if I'd join him, and after a moment's hesitation, I nodded back.
What have you heard?
He asked. Nothing much. Maybe he was looser before he married Sandy?
Well, you know that she was his protege.
Sandy was his second wife,
and 15 years younger. She'd left the firm after they'd become a couple and was now a senior partner at one of our competitors. But that was so long ago it didn't matter anymore. I wasn't lying in the meeting. Thomas has been good to me.
I'll bet he could have been better.
Well, sure, I said, raising what was left of my glass to him. Who doesn't want more? He put his glass down slowly.
Do you?
The tone had shifted beneath me without warning. My face felt hot, my hands unsteady. Never again, I'd promised myself. And yet, all it took was one fight with Dan and one semi-decent man, and here I was again. I looked away from Mark, desperate for a way to get out, an escape route. And then I saw it. Athena. Chapter 22. If the World Was Ending. Then, August. How do you know Mark Fiore? Athena asked me when we were ensconced in her living room an hour later. She'd been having a glass of wine at the bar with the woman who oversaw fundraising for her campaign when I'd clung to her like a life raft and begged her to get me out of there. I'd made my excuses to Mark, then texted Dan in the cab to let him know where I was going, while Athena ordered Lebanese takeout that I just had to try. He's a new client.
Ah.
Athena tucked her feet up underneath her on the chenille sofa. She'd changed out of her suit into a pair of expensive sweatpants and a loose t-shirt. She kept the temperature winter cool, and she'd turned on the gas fire, which was now dancing cheerily. A bottle of wine sat on the coffee table, two glasses emptied and refilled. The Lebanese food had been incredible, and I felt full and sleepy from having eaten too much.
How do you know him? I asked.
I work there, at Sullivan. I felt a thud in my stomach.
You did?
After Harvard, I was in their marketing department for a few years. Mark joined a year or so after I did.
When he left my firm.
Do you know him from there?
No, he left before I started.
I took a large sip of wine. Another connection between Panthera and the Sullivan file. I felt uneasy.
Did you work with Sullivan?
Athena shuddered.
Yes.
And?
That guy's an asshole, and I hope he loses his stupid case. But I don't want to talk about him. What's going on with you and Mark?
Nothing. She raised an eyebrow.
You seemed pretty cozy, and you did ask me to rescue you.
I swirled my wine around.
Dan wants a baby.
And that's bad news?
We'd agreed no children.
Ah.
You should ask why, I said.
Why then?
I felt ashamed. I'd never told anyone about what had happened.
Because 5 years ago, both of us almost cheated on the same night.
Athena sipped at her wine.
That's interesting.
Is it?
A certain synchronicity, anyway.
I guess.
How did you find out?
We confessed.
Also interesting.
I wouldn't have called it interesting at the time. Our life was a catastrophe. Dan had just found out he wasn't making partner. I'd been working insane hours on a year-long trial that sucked up every ounce of my life. We'd been fighting about stupid things. Who was going to stay home for the plumber? The groceries one of us forgot to buy. We were life plan people, and it was when we'd long ago agreed that we were supposed to be trying for a baby. But I didn't want to. Bringing another human into our life seemed impossible. Dan said he was okay with that, but he was always pointing out kids at the store, talking about how cute they were. Is that what men who didn't want to have kids did?
We were in a bad place, I said, and we both had work events to go to one night. Some accounting firm was having a cocktail party. I ran into an old boyfriend from law school, the kind who felt like he could have been the one until he turned into a jerk. I had too much to drink and followed him to a dinner at a restaurant uptown.
And Dan?
He didn't make partner, and he'd ended up with the other associate who hadn't made it, a woman named Wendy, out commiserating.
The universe was conspiring against you.
We were conspiring against ourselves. Our lives were off plan, and so we were blowing them up. A week earlier, if I'd run into law school guy, I would have talked to him for 2 minutes and then ignored him for the rest of the night because he's an asshole. That girl, Wendy, had been flirting with Dan for years. We used to laugh about it, but that was the night he went to dinner with her.
What happened?
Asshole tried to kiss me, and I avoided it, threw up in some bushes, and took a cab home. Wendy succeeded in kissing Dan, but then he came to his senses and left. Our cabs had arrived home almost simultaneously, like some romantic comedy in reverse, and after a second bout of vomiting in the bathroom for me, we'd each confessed what had happened. It had almost been funny how quickly we wanted to unburden ourselves. The words had tumbled out, tearful in my case. We'd stayed up all night talking, nursing our hangovers, dissecting where we'd gone wrong, if we should break up. When dawn broke, we had a plan. We'd go to therapy for 6 months. We'd make sure to let the other know where we were at all times. No kids. The last one had seemed like the obvious result of the evening. If we almost couldn't keep it in our pants for one night, then we shouldn't bring kids into our mess. Our therapist agreed with us. Too many people tried to save their troubled relationships by having children with disastrous results. Kids are a test, he'd said, not a balm. We agreed with him, and we worked on our shit. Dan got his new job. My trial ended. We checked in more, made time for us. We got better. But in our yearly check-ins, we remained vigilant about no kids. Until Dan's stupid family had stolen our home and our peace. Anyway, we worked through it, and we were doing good.
And now?
Dan suddenly says he wants kids. That's a non-starter for me. I mean, I'm 39.
Lots of people have babies older.
Right, last-minute babies. All my college friends are doing it. But they want them. I'm already tired. I don't sleep enough. I just started exercising recently. Athena held up her hand.
You don't have to explain yourself to me. Trust me, I get it.
No kids for you?
You need a partner to have kids. I guess I could do it alone, but it's not a good look for someone in Congress.
Especially if you aspire to higher office, I thought, which Athena clearly did. I drained my glass of wine and considered pouring another. I should go.
Stay. I have a spare room and pajamas. I could use the company.
I put my glass down and focused on her. Her hair was pulled back and there were dark circles under her eyes. I felt like a bad friend for not realizing earlier that she was struggling too.
You okay?
She smiled briefly.
In the grand scheme, sure, but I get lonely sometimes.
And here I've been rattling on about my own problems.
I asked.
Still, I stood. Hold on, let me go and tell Dan.
Sure.
I went into the hall bathroom and pulled out my phone. I saw what I'd texted him earlier. I ran into Athena, we're getting some dinner, we'll check in later. Dan had written back with a thumbs-up emoji. I started to type that I was staying over at Athena's and then stopped. Something about it felt childish, having a sleepover. And something in me felt childish. I was mad at Dan for changing the rules. That's the only explanation I could give for what I wrote. Got called back to the office. That new file. I'll be here for the night prepping a motion. I waited till Dan's bubble of reply appeared.
Make sure to get some sleep, he wrote. Love you.
Love you,
I wrote back, then forwarded my work phone to my cell on the off chance Dan called. I used the bathroom, then went back into the living room. Athena had refilled my glass and was working her way through her own. I'd lost count of how much I'd had to drink. Tomorrow was going to be rough. "So tell me," I said as I sat back down, "what's going on with you?"
"I have a much better idea," Athena said, reaching for her phone. "We should look for guys on Radius."
"What's that?"
"The celebrity dating app? It's like this private dating site for people who don't want their profiles everywhere."
"Oh, interesting."
"You would not believe some of the guys I've seen on there."
"Famous?"
"Married."
"Geez."
"Yep, but you can't screenshot or anything, so there's no evidence."
"We should find you a non-married guy."
"I agree."
She put the phone on the couch between us and opened the app. We scrolled and laughed at some of the photo choices of the men she'd matched with. And holy shit, Thomas was showing as a potential match. Thomas, the married senior partner of my firm. What the hell? After a few adjustments, the app started matching Athena with people more in her age range, and she indicated her interest in a few of them. Then she got a message from an investment banker in his early 40s with movie star good looks.
"What do you think?"
she asked, holding the photo toward me. I took the phone and studied his face through the fog of wine. Dark hair, light eyes, Italian coloring. Hello, Jack. Now, October.
"Where did you come from?" I demand, when I can get the words out.
I peer into the darkness at Gary. He's dressed in black, dark pants, a dark sweater, a hat without a logo. Without his cowboy outfit, I barely recognize him.
"Same place as you," he says. "Hand it over."
He reaches out with a gloved hand, and I give him the gun. I feel lighter letting it go, but Gary being here raises a whole new set of questions. I climb out of the dumpster and brush off the trash that's accumulated on me. The smell of rotting food is thick in my nose. Gary slips a backpack off and puts the gun inside. He's about to say something when the garage door starts to click. He grabs my arm and hauls me toward the door to the stairs.
"Let go," I say in a harsh whisper.
"We need to move quickly. We can't be seen."
He opens the door to the stairs. Another yank and he's pulled me into the stairwell, the door clanging behind us. I pull my arm away and rub it.
"What about the cameras?"
"I took care of those."
"So what's the plan?"
"How's Athena?"
I give him a look.
"How do you think she is?"
"We need to get the body out of there."
"We should call the police."
"No, that's not an option."
My actions could be explained by shock, but Gary's being here makes it conspiracy to obstruct justice and makes us accessories to whatever it was that Athena did to Jack. I want to give her the benefit of the doubt that the shooting was self-defense, but that doesn't mean anyone else will. Either way, if this gets out, her career is over. Mine too.
So what do we do?
Like I said, we need to get rid of the body.
An image of us dismembering Jack like the deer back at the ranch springs unbidden into my mind. No, I meant how?
"We're going to put him down the chute,"
Gary says.
"Into the garbage?"
"Yes, we can get the body in, then the bin will be relocated to a place where it can't be traced to us."
"Who's doing that?"
"It doesn't matter. But we need to get a move on. Let's go."
I can see a million things wrong with this plan as I follow Gary up the stairs, but I don't have my own plan, so there's nothing I can do about it. That's what this whole night has felt like, a series of events that I have no control over. We climb the stairs quickly, adrenaline pushing us. My calves start to protest halfway up, but I ignore it. Up, up, up. Until we're finally at Athena's floor. Gary makes sure there's no one in the hallway, and we slip into Athena's apartment.
She's sitting on the couch, watching the fire. She probably needs medical attention. Who knows what Jack did to her, but there isn't any time for that. I point Gary to the stairs, and we walk up to Athena's bedroom. He enters first, and I steel myself and follow him. Gary walks gingerly around the body, taking it in. I try not to look too closely. Once was enough. Gary slips the backpack off again and pulls out a folded-up tarp and some duct tape. He spreads the tarp out on the floor and crouches down near Jack's head.
Let's go, Nicole. We haven't got much time.
Once again, I want to bolt, but there's nowhere for me to go. So I put my hands on Jack's legs, still warm to the touch, and when Gary says so, we lift him onto the tarp. A low groan escapes me, my back straining, and Gary shoots me a look. But then I realize it wasn't me. It was Jack. Chapter 23. Stranger in a Strange Land. Then, August. It was odd to wake up in a strange bed without Dan, though it wasn't so long ago that I did it at the ranch. Situational habits, I guess. At Athena's, I felt like I was at a hotel, traveling for business. Everything was set up that way, Athena explained, because she often had her chief of staff staying with her when they were in town for constituency business. She spent a lot of time in New York when Congress wasn't sitting. It kept her in touch with her voters, she said, which she liked better than committee work and the daily grind of passing legislation. So there I was in what felt like a hotel room, showering under a rain head with the water as hot as I could stand it. The hangover was as bad as I'd feared, and I thought about asking Athena for a Xanax to fend it off. Instead, I brushed my teeth and took 3 aspirin from the bottle I found in the medicine cabinet. Some food would help too, and I could already smell the coffee brewing downstairs. When I got back to my room, Athena had laid out an outfit for me. I dried my hair and dressed quickly, then checked my messages. A text from Dan that I answered quickly, shoving down the persistent guilt, and the usual slew of work emails that always accumulated overnight. Buried among them was a message from Mark, asking if everything was okay and expressing his wish that I hadn't had to leave so quickly. Not good. I wrote back quickly, assuring him that everything was under control, the family emergency I'd claimed the night before was now resolved. I'd catch up with him about the file next week. I hoped that this would send the right signal, that I wanted us to have a good working relationship, but nothing more. That suits you, Athena said when I found her in the kitchen over a large coffee and a plate of fruit. Thank you. I patted my hands over the lush material. I think it's nicer than my wedding dress. Athena laughed. She was wearing one of her signature dresses with a blazer over it. She was still as lithe as she'd been as a model, and clothes fit her in a way they'd never fit me, no matter how much running I did. Tricks of the trade, and I still have connections in the industry, so I get good discounts and samples. From others in PL? More from my life before. I do have Connie to thank for this place, though. I was surprised she hadn't mentioned it before. Oh, I thought it was yours. I wish. No way I could afford this place on my salary. But Connie likes having people she knows in her properties. So I get to live here. I took a seat at the counter as Athena poured me a cup of coffee. How did you end up in Panthera? I was invited, same as you. By who? Athena hovered with a milk jug above my cup. I nodded and she added some. No one ever knows who invited them. Connie invited Samantha, or suggested her anyway. Athena put the jug down slowly. She told you that? Yeah, I can't get into the details because of confidentiality, but she and Samantha are involved in a case Connie referred to me. Athena sucked in a deep breath, then let it out slowly. Can I give you some advice, Nicole? You shouldn't litigate this. The case Connie sent me? Panthera Leo. asking so many questions, who brought you in, or why I joined. That sort of thing is discouraged.
Why?
Another question.
Okay. But it's the way I am. I can't just turn it off.
You accepted the invitation without question, didn't you?
Well, yes, but
go with that instinct.
She popped a strawberry into her mouth.
Let me put it this way. Do you think men go around questioning how they got the job they weren't quite qualified for, or the promotion that should have gone to someone else?
I doubt it.
Well, that's part of what we're about. Creating an environment where you don't have to think like a woman. You don't have to query why you got something or whether you deserve it. You can just be a man about it.
A white man?
Athena smiled. Even better. The only question you should be asking yourself is, how would Dan react to whatever's happening?
I took a sip of my coffee. I got her point, but she'd chosen the wrong example. Because Dan was a questioner, too. It was one of the things we had in common. We liked debating and figuring out puzzles. One of the reasons Dan was so disappointed when he left his firm was because he wasn't going to get to litigate anymore. He wasn't going to be the one to convince another person to do what he wanted. There was a power in that, in persuasion. When you were good at it, it was like a drug.
You're telling me to be grateful, I said. Aren't you? A new file, an apartment, the support of the pride.
Yes, I am.
Well, good then.
Athena's phone dinged. She picked it up and a smile lit up her face.
Finally, some good news.
Oh?
That guy, Jack, he wants to meet.
That's great.
You don't sound convinced.
Sorry, I've never internet dated. How do you make sure he's not a psycho?
That's one of the good things about Radius. There's a filter built in because you have to be recommended to join. Then you meet in a public place and trust your instincts.
And that works?
I'd say one good date for every four that are a disaster.
Not amazing odds.
You've got to break some eggs.
True. I glanced at the clock on the microwave. Shit, I should get going.
Thank you for staying.
Thank you for having me and for rescuing me last night. Athena pulled me into a hug. I was surprised at the gesture, but I accepted it. She smelled like the shampoo I used that morning, spicy and fresh. She held me away from her like my mother used to do sometimes when I was young to check that my school uniform was on properly.
You're not wearing your pin.
She tapped the one on her lapel. I reached up reflexively to my collar. I had been wearing it, though I still felt self-conscious about it. It's on my other dress. I'll put it on when I get my stuff upstairs.
Good.
Why is it so important? Athena shook her head. Okay. No more questions.
That's the right attitude.
Athena's phone dinged again, and she moved toward it. I gave her a small wave, then walked upstairs to collect my things. I found the pin on my suit jacket and moved it to the dress's collar, feeling bad about putting a hole through the luxurious fabric. I checked myself in the mirror to make sure it was on straight, and it felt like a stranger was staring back at me. A thinner, more sophisticated version of me. Someone who was already on her way to being more successful. That's what the pin symbolized, not only a way to recognize one another, but also a way to remind us of who we were, what we were. I smiled at this new me. Athena, Connie, Samantha, Heather. We were a unit, and together we could take on the world. It was exhilarating until it struck me. Connie, Samantha. They hadn't been wearing their pins in the meeting the other day. I was almost sure of it. But why? I spent the day reading depositions in the Sullivan file and prepping for the very real motion that I had to present to the court to get Samantha's evidence admitted.
As the sunlight streamed through my office window, the doubts I had that morning at Athena's began to fade. I was being silly, reading things that weren't there into a situation. They probably were wearing their pins, and I didn't even notice. It wasn't significant either way. I filed it away like I had to file so many things in my job. The clients who you knew were lying, sometimes about small things, sometimes about significant facts. The sexist and sometimes racist comments made by senior counsel, all said with an innocent wink. The way you highlighted or downplayed certain facts, depending on how they helped or hindered your file. Maybe Dan was right. What was it that I loved about this job again? The ennui slipped away as I worked through the evidence. Cases were puzzles, and I liked puzzles. I enjoyed being able to figure out how to get what I wanted out of a witness, for them to underestimate me and then wonder what happened when it was over. The tight expression on the face of opposing counsel when I'd scored points in cross-examination. That was why I did this, because I was good at it, because it was fun. As the day waned into night, I made some calls and texted Dan to meet me at Hudson Yards. Then I collected my things and went to wait for an elevator. John, the managing partner, was waiting too. He was the benevolent ghost of the office. Sometimes he felt more mythical than real, with many people, including Thomas, attributing things to him that he might not have been behind. John was saying, "John asked me to tell you, John, John, John." People invoked his name like the Bible, for both good and evil. The real man was 60, unassuming, and sometimes seemed to wear the power that he wielded as a burden. "Nicole, just the woman I was looking for," he said with a smile and tired eyes. "Here I am," I said, though I'd been in my office all day, easily findable. "I've been hearing things about you from Thomas." I shrunk in my heels. Fucking Thomas. He couldn't stand to be anything other than the center of attention for 5 minutes. "He says you've landed a new file from Sullivan?" "Yes, that's right." "That's great. And might there be other work from them?" "I had drinks with the CEO yesterday. He mentioned at least one other file. Nothing guaranteed." "Understood. But that's fabulous news all around. Thomas is very proud of you, and so am I." "Thank you," I said, though part of me wanted to tell him to get lost. I wasn't his 10-year-old daughter with a good grade on a book report. I was old enough to be his third wife. But maybe I could use this to my advantage. I hadn't heard back from Thomas after he'd interviewed Julia, and I'd already received 2 follow-ups from Karma about what was happening. I could use a junior associate dedicated to the file.
"Do you not have an associate assigned?"
"Not yet. We've lost a few recently, and everyone is swamped. But there is a promising Harvard grad who Thomas interviewed a few days ago." John gave me an appraising look. He probably saw one of me a day, someone going around the usual protocols to get what they wanted. I'd never done it before, but I'd seen plenty of others do it.
"The file will support the billables?"
100%. We don't have to make a long-term commitment. If she doesn't work out, we can always let her go.
"Consider it done."
The elevator arrived and we got on, riding downstairs in silence. John was like that. He said what he had to say, then moved on. When we got to the lobby, I thanked him, and he gave me a tired nod, then walked to the car that was waiting for him. I texted Karma to let her know that Julia was going to be hired and sent myself an email as a reminder to follow up with Thomas in the morning. He was going to be pissed, but I was trying to have a post-Thomas view of the world. The day had cooled off finally, and I decided to walk. I opened my Uber Eats app and ordered from a place near the new apartment, telling the driver to meet me in the lobby. I walked through Bryant Park, unpacking the day, unpacking myself. I'd lied to Dan the night before about where I was. That was stupid. I wasn't going to do that anymore, I promised myself, like I'd promised him 5 years ago. It was a nice walk from the office to Hudson Yards. I decided that I'd add it to my daily routine. Half an hour there and back was a good buffer between the stress of the office and the peace I should have at home. The delivery guy was in the lobby when I got there, and so was Dan. He waited while I retrieved our dinner.
What's all this?
I got the keys today and I thought we'd have dinner here. Celebrate. The real estate agent had messengered the keys over earlier that afternoon.
Good idea,
he said. His tie poked out of his suit jacket pocket. He was wearing a black backpack like he always did to the office, not caring if it was cool or not. It was convenient for carrying what he needed. Another thing to love about Dan, the fact that he didn't care what people thought about him. But why was I tallying up the things to love about Dan? We rode the elevator up as it filled with the delicious smells of the food I'd ordered. Then I opened the door where I had another surprise waiting.
It's furnished. Wow.
It's mostly the stuff that was here for the staging. I asked if we could keep it, and Connie said yes. Dan turned to look at me, trepidation in his eyes. What?
It's just, a lot has changed in a really short time frame. 2 months ago, we'd never even heard of this Panthera thing, and now here we're living in one of their apartments, and you've gotten the biggest file of your career from someone in the group, and you're hanging out with them all the time.
Those are good things.
You sure?
Are you upset that I have new friends?
No, I... Look, I'm grateful for this place. And it's good that you're getting work. I don't know. You seem different these days. You even look different.
It's the dress.
Is it new? I've never seen it before.
Oh, I looked down. Athena gave it to me. She gets all these samples because she used to be a model.
See? You're even being dressed by Panthera.
No, I... This is not how I wanted this evening to go. I promise you they're the most benign group of women you've ever met. They take on the world, sure, but in a good way.
If you say so.
I do. But why don't you find out for yourself? I'll organize a drink for all of us, okay? You can meet them and then you'll see. He still looked dubious.
All right.
Can we eat now? I'm starving. We spread the food out on the dining room table. It was made of reclaimed wood and concrete, so much more modern and trendier than the furniture at Penny's, which we decided to leave for Catherine despite her disparaging comments about the furnishings. I'd ordered all our favorites and a double order of sesame noodles. Dan sat across from me and dug into the container of noodles. He made a face. Not good? I asked.
Fine, I guess. Just doesn't taste the same.
I reached out to take the container from him, ready to chide him for seeing differences where there weren't any. But he was right. The noodles were good, but not as good as the ones from our usual place, so I couldn't correct him. Instead, we ate and made polite conversation, and then we packed up and went back to Penny's, trying not to focus on how we were about to move to a place where even the same food tasted different.